Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness podcast presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, and boy, I tell you what, I sure did miss NFL football every single Sunday. It should be year-round, but that's not possible. The old cliche says, you know, you don't know what you got till it's gone, and I realize it again and again for months on end in the off-season. It's just not the same. You get what? 5 months of repetitive headlines, reaching, just trying to fill the air, so to speak. But we don't have to worry about filling the air, because tomorrow the air is going to be filled with shouting fans, beer, and NFL football. And it's going to be for every Sunday until February, and I personally love it. Now, let's address the elephant in the room. I said at the end of last episode we'd be airing on Fridays, but after some finagling, we've now officially taken the Saturday afternoon slot. This is where we're going to be. So if you're a fan, the few of you out there, shout out to you guys. Make sure every Saturday afternoon, there's going to be a new episode come through Saturday afternoon, evening. If you want to watch it Sunday morning, if you want to watch it after the Sunday game, just to see how wrong I actually was, that's probably what I'll do. Watch it after the game, and then go hate on me on Twitter, at Nick Donatic. Tell me how wrong I was. And that's a perfect segue, because we got to look into that Kansas City Chiefs, New England Patriots game. Season opener. Brady's getting his fifth ring. You know, the crowd's excited. They had Patriots-Falcons scores on the scoreboard pregame. A little trolling. I'm all for trolling. But 28-3, and well, it didn't go so well for the New England Patriots and Tom Brady. Some of my takeaways from the game, obviously it's already Saturday, so you know, if you watched the game, you saw it. If you saw all the analysis, these are just things that I took away from the game. The Kansas City running backs were dominant. Kareem Hunt, that guy is legit. You know, I hadn't heard too much about Kareem Hunt. You know, I live in the Northeast. There wasn't too much hype surrounding him. Let me tell you, that kid was under hype. That was phenomenal. Can he keep it up for a full season? I don't know. Maybe. If he could do it against the Patriots defense, Patriots defense is no slouch. Of course, you had Hightower go down mid-game. Hopefully, Hightower's all right. But you look, that's a fairly good defense, led by Bill Belichick, one of the greatest defensive minds in football history. And you got a guy, Alex Smith. Remember when Alex Smith was a bust in San Francisco, pre-Jim Harbaugh days? Alex Smith was a pocket passer that couldn't pocket pass. His mobility was either underutilized or underdeveloped. I don't know. Once Harbaugh came and he gave him that confidence, he's been completely different. He went from a bust to someone that maximizes their talent in the greatest possible way. 28 for 35. 80% completion rate. That's insanity against the Bill Belichick defense. Malcolm Butler and newly acquired Stephon Gilmore. 4 touchdowns, no picks. Now, speaking of Butler and Gilmore, it's fair to say that at least 17 of those passes were in the hands of their playmakers that are not receivers. They cut Jeremy Maclin, so their receiving core is not phenomenal. So, Tyreek Hill, if you want to call him running back, receiver, both, a slash, good old-fashioned Cordell Stewart type, obviously not playing quarterback, but you know what I mean, 7 catches, 133 yards, only ran the ball twice. That big 75-yard touchdown reception. My goodness, it flashes the peace sign at the end. It was hilarious. I thought it would come back to bite him, but the Patriots just didn't have the bite. Then you look, Kareem Hunt, 5 catches, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. That brings Kareem Hunt to 246 total yards, 3 touchdowns on 22 touches. A 78-yard reception and a 58-yard run. Unbelievable. The big plays were everywhere. Charkhandrick West, 21-yard run, 25-yard catch for Chris Conley. And then you look down, 5 catches, 40 yards at Calm Day for Travis Kelce, who some people believe is the best tight end in football. Not too many of them out there, but you know, some of them. They made the argument when Gronk was hurt. One of the things I was looking forward to, the underrated part of this, was the two of the best tight ends in football. Top 5, you know? And you have Kelce go out there, 5 catches, 40 yards, and Rob Gronkowski, a virtual no-show, 2 catches, 33 yards. And you look at the Patriots, and their leading receiver is Danny Amendola. And you know, I was one of the people who thought, Julian Edelman going down, it's not the end of the world. Julian Edelman, underrated receiver, lightning quick. He is a better Wes Welker in every single way, in my opinion. He's got the brain for it. He's faster, but he went down, and maybe they didn't have a time to adjust. I think as the season goes along, Brandon Cooks will get more involved. He had 3 catches for 88 yards, excuse me. You need more than that. You really do. And it was a night where Tom Brady was a little shaky. And that doesn't happen too often, especially in New England. Against a team like this, the Kansas City Chiefs? Chiefs are a good team. I had them going in as a wild card. And who knows, maybe they'll probably contend for the division till the end. But really? It's very hard to believe. 42-27 on your home turf, 21-0 in the fourth quarter. That is humiliating. On the night, you got to celebrate with your fans. The banner goes up. Everybody's in attendance. Was Roger Goodell there? I don't know. I didn't look into it. I doubt it. That's a side story. But it's hard to watch. You know, you got Mike Gillisley as their best offensive performer. He had 3 touchdowns and averaged 3 yards a carry. Amendola had a good game. 6 catches for 100. Like I said, Cooks had 3 for 88, but 54 were on 1 reception. What is that? Where are the playmakers? You know, you assume, considering they found a guy like Edelman, they'd have a backup plan. And they had Mitchell go down. Maybe Mitchell was supposed to be an integral part of this. I doubt it. It's a very confusing outcome to what I personally, if you watched the first episode, and if you haven't, please go ahead and watch it. You might say it's old news, but like I said, you can mock how wrong I was. I had my first quote-unquote bold prediction. I went a not-so-bold prediction to, you know, dip my toe in the water for the show, for the series. I said the Patriots were going to win. I thought I was fairly confident with that. My MVP of the season was Tom Brady. I was a little shell-shocked after that one. Now, am I saying the Patriots are going to miss the playoffs? No, not at all. Their division is very winnable. It always is. And they have the best coach in the division, one of the best coaches in the league, probably the best coach in the league, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He didn't look like it 2 days ago. Not at all. But it's only one game. And just to move into a segment I'd like to do every week, we're going to do the overreaction of the week. Now, clearly we only had one game, but you got to start somewhere. I think the overreaction of the week was the fact that we're debating whether Tom Brady is done, quote-unquote. The fact that we're talking about if Tom Brady's going to hit a wall. Now, as a person who, I grew up a Peyton Manning fan. I love the way Peyton played the game. He played the game as much with his head as he did with his body. The man was a genius on the football field. He'd make people beat themselves constantly. So even when he was in Denver throwing lofty ducks, he could throw 55 touchdowns in a season. They might say they got punked in the Super Bowl. I don't put all the blame for that one on him. But they did. Now, for people to say this one game shows you Tom's going to hit a wall, I doubt it. Unless there's an injury that's lurking that we don't know about, that maybe he doesn't even know about. You know, you switch sports a little bit, you look at a guy like Greg Bird for the New York Yankees. Greg Bird was having lower leg issues, and they didn't know what was wrong with him for a few months. Eventually, they surgically removed a piece of a bone in his ankle, and now he's back to playing, and he's fine. Doctors said there were 2 bones there. Well, there should have been 1, and that's very uncommon. But it's one of those things, you might not know it's there. Maybe Tom's hurt. Maybe it's those concussions Giselle was talking about. That's sarcasm. Anyway, back to the Peyton Manning-Brady discussion, which will never go away, thankfully. Greatest quarterback rivalry in football history as of right now. Who knows? Probably everything gets trumped one day. But as of right now, number one for me. You know, Manning in his last 2 years just didn't look right. Halfway through the second to last year, and the last year he was just, you could tell he was hurt. His arm had already started to go, and when his base, his foundation, his legs started to give out on him, he had nothing. At that point, it was all grit, intelligence, and maybe prayers, and Bud Light, and Papa John's. But I don't think that's this for Tom. I think Tom had a bad game. It happens. And I think they'll adjust. Will they go 14-2? Not if they look like that every game. Are they going to look like that every game? I highly doubt it. This team is a playoff team. They have the talent for it. They have the coaching staff for it. Matt Patricia, one of my favorite coordinators in the league. I'm surprised he hasn't been given some looks for a head coaching job, personally. It could be, just on a little bit of a tangent here, I wonder if it's because Belichick is considered a defensive-minded coach, so they don't give Patricia any credit. Similar to how they didn't really look at Rex Ryan assistance, because Rex Ryan was a defensive genius. Who knows? Anyway, I think the overreaction of the week is anyone out there that thinks Tom Brady is done. The guy's a champion. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the quote. He's the GOAT. No quote-unquote. He is the GOAT, at quarterback at least. If you want to argue the GOAT overall in football, it's hard to do. His positions have different value. The way the game is played nowadays, the most important position is a quarterback, and he is the best quarterback in the modern, you know, you want to go modern with a loosely used, like, you know, late night, post-Montana Steve Young, you can have the Montana-Brady debate all day. It's like Jordan LeBron, Jordan Kobe, Jordan and anyone. Anyway, wrapping up on the New England-Kansas City game with one final point. I feel awful for Eric Berry. Eric Berry, one of the brightest stars in the NFL. And confirmation yet again, he might be the unluckiest man in the entire league. You look back, Eric Berry, injury history. Obviously not his fault. Berry, torn ACL. And these are just three of the major quote-unquote injuries. Obviously one of them, you know what it's going to be. Torn ACL, the ruptured Achilles on Thursday night, and the man had Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's insane. You know, some people would think it and say, what did you do in a past life? Maybe you're just, you know, bitten by a spider or something. You got awful luck. I have no answer for it, and I don't know if Eric does either. It's really hard to see a player that talented have to fight against things that he really can't control. The ACL, and the funny thing about ACL injuries, once you've sustained a torn ACL, you are 30 times more likely to sustain another one. So that means somewhere down the road, could be 2, 3 years, 4 years, could be 6 years, could be next year, he's 30 times more likely to tear his ACL. At that point, you start looking at him as a guy who's talented enough, if he plays a full NFL career, which he still can, 100%, you play a full NFL career, he's talented enough to be in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the best safeties in the league. Some would argue the best safety in the league. I'd personally give that to Landon Collins, but that's not what we're talking about. It'd be another career cut short by injuries. And that's the hard part about football. This isn't like basketball, where a lot of the injuries are going to be non-contact and you can't do anything with them. The league of torn ACLs. Look at Derrick Rose. Phenomenal young talent. Career ruined. This is the NFL, where at any given time, 11 guys on the opposing team are on the field and trying to hit you, and whether intentionally or not intentionally, trying to hurt you. It's hard. It's really hard to stay healthy and maintain performing at a level that high. So, good luck, Eric Berry. Even though you'll never hear this, I'm rooting for you. All right, folks. Let's take it into the week one game-by-game predictions. Let's run through it chronologically. So I'm 0-1 this week. Immediately 0-1. Off to a hot start. Just go right into it. Anyway, so now looking at the matchups for week one, I saw some divisional matchups, and obviously then you have games like Raiders-Titans, which personally I think is going to be a great game. Two of the best young quarterbacks in the league. But you just wonder, why some divisional matchups and not all? You know, Major League Baseball scheduling, usually you open in April with a lot of divisional games, and you end in September with a lot of divisional games. Why not have a divisional week one and a divisional week 17? Now, if you're a fan of the Giants, or you're in the tri-state area, and you like the Giants, or you see Giants games, you know that the Giants open up against Dallas Cowboys almost every season. And then they play Dallas in about between week 12 and week 15, prime time again. So, it gets stale if you have constant division rounds. But, the thing is, the Giants don't have to play the Cowboys every Sunday night to open up the year. And this is the second week in a row I've gotten on a soapbox for this one, but I'm very tired of it. It gets old. And we'll talk about Ezekiel Elliott and the Texas court providing him with an injunction so he could play when we get to Cowboys-Giants, which will be, since it's primetime, later in the docket. Let's start. Let's go Jets-Bills in probably the most meaningless game of the week. I think this game's right up there with Colts-Rams when the Colts don't have Andrew Luck. That's going to be killer for ratings. Panthers-Niners when the Niners are rebuilding. The only reason Panthers-Niners is above this is because Cam Newton's coming back from his shoulder injury, and you're wondering if he's going to be MVP Cam Newton or last year Cam Newton. I'm leaning more towards MVP Cam Newton. And then Saints-Vikings, a battle of two teams that could be decent and could sneak into the playoffs, but could at the same time go 6-10, 7-9, and nobody would bat an eyelash. But I'm going to give the title to Jets-Bills, the only real New York team fighting the team that stole their likeness. So, Jets-Bills, 1 p.m., Jets starting Josh McCown, Bills starting Tyrod Taylor, Bills after having traded Sammy Watkins. I think the Bills take this one because the Jets are awful. I could give you some high-level analysis, or I could just be basic with you. The Jets are awful. Their receiving core got better after the Sheldon Richardson trade, but I don't know if the chemistry's there. And at the same time, I don't know if McCown can get the ball to Curse. I don't know if he's actually able to do it. And you have a weakened Buffalo secondary because they lost Stephon Gilmore to New England. But does it matter if they're weakened if you don't have any offensive talent? Now, the big player for the Jets that I'm rooting for, yeah, openly rooting, that I'm hoping gets integrated into their offense because he's a talented guy and he was underutilized in his old place, Will Tye. Stony Brook University alum, same as myself. Shout out to Will Tye. Will there be a weekly shout out to Will Tye? Who knows? Till he comes on the show? That could be a thing. Depends how I feel when I sit down to do this. Anyway, Will Tye is a talented receiving threat at the tight end position. He's a decent blocker. He has underrated and sneaky speed. He's a stocky frame tight end with reliable hands. He will drop some passes. It's true. So how are you going to say he has reliable hands if he drops passes? Everybody drops passes. Jimmy Graham drops passes. So you take a look at a guy like Will Tye, and you think he could be a threat for the Jets. Matt Forte is their running back. Obviously, I assume they're going to try to run the ball a good amount. But if you get stonewalled, you get the situation 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7, even 3rd and 2, you have a safety blanket for your quarterback. And I think going forward, I think they should hang on to Will Tye because they're going to have a young quarterback. If McCown gets hurt, if they eventually see the light and pull McCown and realize there was no reason to sign him whatsoever other than a little mentoring for their young quarterbacks, he shouldn't be on the field. You put Hackenberg out there, who's unproven, but he was a second-round pick, and you have to know what you have. Otherwise, you just wasted a pick, and you can't just waste second-round picks. You can't. Now, if I were an owner and my GM wasted a second-round pick, I'd take a look at what I have in that GM. I might fire him, especially in a situation like the Jets, where they are not winning, and it doesn't look like they're too close to winning. It looks like they're closer to 0-16 than 16-0. You know what I mean? So if he doesn't get out there, or Bryce Petty, I would throw Hackenberg out there because you need to, but if you put Bryce Petty out there, if he looks good, all will be forgiven. If he looks bad and you put Hackenberg out there and he looks bad, then you look bad and you're looking for a new job. I'm taking the Bills on this one. Jags-Texans, another AFC South game. Not the most star-studded matchup, but it's going to be interesting. I would watch this game. I'd watch out for this game, guys. This could be some late-game intrigue because you have a new coach down in Jacksonville, Doug Marrone. By the way, fun fact, Doug Marrone, a graduate of my high school. That's rare. Very low graduation rate. It's rare that there's a graduate alone, let alone a successful one. You know what I mean? So, good for Doug. Doug Marrone down there with Tom Coughlin trying to institute a new culture. And they're still going with Bortles because they have to see what they have because Bortles is going to be a free agent soon and they want to know if they should re-sign him or not. Now, personally, having watched Bortles, he's a talented guy, but he's befuddling. He can make the throws that win you games, but he can also make many more throws that lose you games, that make you scratch your head, that make you yell profanity at your television set. Or if you're at the stadium, yell profanity directly at him. This game's going to be close. I think the Houston Texans, simply off pure emotion from the devastation of Houston and the Southern Texas area, are going to win this game. Never mind the fact they're a better team. It doesn't matter. They're going to win this game. J.J. Watt having raised over $20 million in relief efforts and probably still raising more. They are going to win this game. Like I said, I think it could be close, but with Blake Bortles as a quarterback, this could easily be a laugher too. Either way, I'm taking Houston. Steelers-Browns. Pittsburgh, every single time, every time, every year, until Big Ben retires. Every time. The Pittsburgh Steelers have too much firepower, and when you consider the fact that the Browns just cut Calvin Pryor, a safety that I think is pretty talented, he's a starter quality safety in the NFL. Now maybe he's a hothead. They cut him because he got into a fight at practice. How many fights happen in NFL practices when the testosterone's flowing and it's just men hitting men for hours? You get tired of people when you're around them a lot. It happens. But clearly, they felt that he was not worth the trouble. I think Calvin's going to find another team. If he doesn't, I'll be very surprised. But, you know, it wouldn't shock me. A team like New England taking a chance on him, because Bill loves players like this. High upside, not much of a downside. If the guy doesn't work out, Bill could just shrug his shoulders and say, yep, he's not coachable. Or, yep, he didn't fit our system, like Chad Johnson. Like Albert Haynesworth. But if it works, like Randy Moss. Now, obviously, Calvin Pryor probably won't make as much of an impact as Randy Moss, one of the greatest receivers of all time. But some depth at the back end for your secondary. Potentially working into some different packages when you have six defensive backs on the field, especially as McCourty gets older, Patrick Chung gets older. Not a bad piece to have. Notice how the breakdown of this game became all about Calvin Pryor, because the Browns don't have much going for them. Yeah, Browns lose. That's all. Almost every week. Get used to that. I'm going to pick the Browns to lose almost every time. It's just too easy. I got to get my record up. Next game is Cardinals-Lions, and I'm on the fence for this one. I'll take the Lions, because I think this one will be a shootout. Score will be in the 30s, maybe the 40s. I love David Johnson, the running back for the Cardinals. I think he's underrated, if that's possible, because Ezekiel Elliott got a shine last year, but David Johnson can do anything he wants at any given time. Zeke's a phenomenal running back. He has a great offensive line, but in the receiving game, Zeke's got nothing on David Johnson. It's David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell, best two running backs in the league. Any Hoosiers, I'm not taking Carson Palmer in this game. That's what it comes down to. It's going to be close, and the Cardinals are... I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to come down to a late-game drive. Knowing Matthew Stafford and how he excels most times, nobody's perfect, but how he excels in game-winning drives, late-game drives, I'll take Matthew Stafford. I'll ride with him. I'll ride with the new big money guy. Now, a sad story. The Buccaneers-Dolphins game has been postponed. That's not sad. Sad is the impending doom lurching towards the state of Florida. Hurricane after hurricane. We send our thoughts and prayers to people down in Florida. There's a mandatory evacuation in certain areas. Please evacuate, people. Don't be too proud. Just stay safe. Just another reminder that football is just a game, and the games fade away. They're here to keep us entertained and to have fun, and I'm hoping that all the Floridian football fans, whether you're a fan of the Bucs, the Dolphins, or any other team, I hope that the NFL can give you just a little bit of a distraction this week. Because it's going to be rough for a while. And I'm just hoping that this can bring you a little bit of joy in a dark time. No way to segue out of that one. But we have to move on with the show. Life must go on. We get to Falcons-Bears. Fun matchup. Falcons should win this one pretty easily. It'll be interesting to see the Bears' offense operate with a new quarterback. But the Bears are still the Bears. They're rebuilding. Give them a few years. I think they'll be pretty good. But not this year. Falcon beats Bear. That's a headline of a story I would definitely read. Now, we move into what I'm calling my underrated matchup of the week. Raiders-Titans. Oh boy, I cannot wait for this one. Derek Carr coming back from his injury. Mariota coming back from his injury. Let's hope they're both okay and they stay healthy this year, because they were phenomenal when they were healthy last year. I think this one's going to be a barn burner, because the Raiders secondary is not great. Titans defense is decent. I'd say top half of the league maybe, but they're still somewhere between, you know, the middle third. Maybe 11 and 23. You know, 11th and 23rd if you rank them. And that's just looking at talent-wise. You take a look at the Titans offense. You got DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry, who's a truck, Mariota, and an underrated receiving core with newly acquired Eric Decker and a couple of holdovers. And you think this could be a matchup we see for the next few years. Now, we talked about Brady Manning earlier. Now, I'm not saying this is going to be Brady Manning, but if these teams, if these young quarterbacks keep these teams in the playoffs, which is quite possible, then we could see this matchup every year. We could see Carr Mariota, and it'll have another element because they're both mobile. Now, if you've never seen Tom Brady's 40-yard dash, go look it up on YouTube right now. Pause the podcast and look it up. It's worth it. He's not exactly running like a gazelle. And Peyton Manning, you can tell how unathletic he was by the fact that when he ran for a touchdown against the Dallas Cowboys, he juked out literally everyone in the stadium, the cameraman included. DeMarcus Ware wrote a piece for the Players Tribune, and he talked about how later, when he talked to Peyton, Peyton looked at him and said, "I gotcha. Come on now." So you got two mobile quarterbacks that can move the pocket, move out of the pocket, throw on the run. I think this is going to be a fun game. Most fun game of the week. And I'm riding with the Titans to win this one. I know, shocked myself on that one too. I think it's a close matchup, and I would have given the edge to the Raiders, but I don't know if they can stop that two-headed attack in the Tennessee backfield. I think Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray might be able to gash them late in the game and just play a little ball control offense. Going with the Titans. On to the next game, Ravens-Bengals. Another in the long line of 1 o'clock kickoffs. 1 o'clock Eastern. 10 a.m. if you're on the West Coast. Shout out to you. You can have cereal while you watch your football. 10 a.m. Gosh, that's a time that not supposed to exist on weekends. Anyway, Ravens-Bengals is going to be an odd game to watch for me. If nothing more than because the Bengals lost a big chunk of their offensive line in Clint Bowling, Andrew Whitworth, etc. I think it's going to be hard to see them adjust. I think Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard are talented running backs, but they can't make the holes themselves, so we'll see how they do. I think the Bengals win this one in a hard-nosed, sloppy AFC North game. This is what AFC North games are supposed to be. If it was snowing, it'd be perfect. It's September, and thankfully it's not. Otherwise, we'd have a serious problem. Final early game, Eagles-Redskins. Kirk Cousins on his franchise tag again. Newly acquired Terrell Pryor, Jordan Reed, another top five tight end in the NFL. I'm going to go with the Eagles to win this one in a mild upset because the Redskins lost their two top receiving threats. And I'm not a Kirk Cousins believer. I don't think Kirk is awful. I think Kirk will probably have a Joe Flacco-like career where you look back at the end and you say, hey, that's pretty good. But you're not going to look at it and say, hey, that's a Hall of Famer. No. Pretty good can win you games, though. Not going to win you this game, in my opinion. I think Carson Wentz is going to get off to another great start for this season. I like Carson, his mobility, his elusiveness at the quarterback position. He's sneaky elusive. We talked about Edelman before. Obviously, he's not Julian Edelman, but at the quarterback position, he might be. I think with Alshon Jeffrey coming in and their bolstered offense, Jeffrey, Blunt, among others, I think they win this game. Probably somewhere in the range of 31-28. Now, if you're saying I'm picking a lot of high scores, I'm not confident in some of these defenses. And obviously, turnovers will drive the scores back down or make it more lopsided. I think these teams are relatively close in talent, as are most teams in the NFC East. So if it goes the other way, it wouldn't shock me. But if I had to pick it based on the rosters, I'd take Philly. Slight edge. On to the lone 405 kick, the aforementioned snooze fest. Colts Rams. Who wins this game? Who cares? Oh, you're picking all the games? Oh, I'm picking all the games? I guess I care. I'm gonna go with the Rams. Jared Goff didn't look great last season. I believe he didn't record a single victory. Which, you know, if you know the history, you know what I'm gonna go to. Peyton Manning led the league in interceptions. You know, blah blah blah. Not saying Jared Goff's Peyton Manning. But first year doesn't always tell the whole story. I think Jared's talented. I haven't watched him enough to know if he's more Carson Wentz or Blake Bortles. Odd two to pick, but I'm going for the fact that I can't tell if he's talented but not going to be able to pull it together or talented but still couldn't pull out victories. There is a difference. Not every loss is the same. Not to mention the Colts don't have Andrew Luck. So how do they win this game without Andrew Luck? Well, some Jared Goff turnovers would certainly help. Some stout defense, and a running game. And who knows, maybe Scott Tolzien will go out and have the game of his life. I doubt it. I'd bet against that heavily if you were betting on this game. On to the 425 kicks. We have two Panthers 49ers. I'll take the Panthers in this one in what might be a closer game than it should be. Because the 49ers, while I said before, they are rebuilding and they're not going to make the playoffs. They did sign Pierre Garçon. They did make some moves that make you look at new GM John Lynch and head coach Kyle Shanahan if he was involved in the personnel moves, which he probably was. Make you say, I think you guys know what you're doing. There was a small backlash when John Lynch got the job and got a long contract on a job he's never done before. But it makes you think, having seen his first offseason and that trade he made with the Bears, he can do this. At least it looked like he can. Sadly, John Lynch won't be suiting up at safety for this team. So I think the Carolina Panthers win it no matter what. I'd keep my eye on Christian McCaffrey. He was very fun to watch in the preseason, just like he was in college. I think they're going to involve him in this offense. That might take some of the pressure off of Cam running so much. Furthermore, Kelvin Benjamin, Greg Olsen, on the defensive end, Luke Kuechly, and the boys, Thomas Davis. I think they win this one. They're just a better team. Sometimes it comes down to they're just a better team. It doesn't always have to be the flash you pick. Then again, I went not so bold in episode 1 and it backfired on me. If I come back next week and I go 2-14 in week 1, May have to start picking the Rams to win every game. Second 4:25 kickoff. This is a former playoff matchup. It's a rematch that could be this year's NFC Championship game. Seahawks-Packers. Pressure-packed game. It's going to be intense. It's going to be a playoff atmosphere. That being said, I'm going with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. I think trading Jermaine Kearse for Sheldon Richardson in the long term might be a correct move. In the short term, it weakens their offense, and I think they'll feel the impact. Not to mention, these Seahawks sometimes take a little time to get revved up, which is odd, because Pete Carroll is always amped up to 9,000. They start slow in games sometimes. They start slow to the season sometimes. I'm taking Green Bay to win this one. It'll be a great game. Could be one of the best games of the year. But I don't think Seattle will have the firepower to keep up with Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, Ty Montgomery, the wide receiver, turned running back, turned, they'll be playing linebacker soon, who knows, and a group of talented pass catchers and a veteran defense. There's some youth in there, but you're still driven by Clay Matthews, a Super Bowl champion, a guy who's been there. He knows what he's doing. On to the 8:30 Sunday night game, the game that is, quote, America's game of the week, according to NBC. Shocking. It's America's game of week one almost every year. And it's it's America's game of the week usually twice a year. Wonder how that works. Got to play to the big markets, eh? Giants-Cowboys with Ezekiel Elliott playing in the game due to an injunction he obtained to suspend his suspension. That's odd to say. It's a mouthful. But now Zeke's going to be there. Dak's going to be there. Dez, Cole Beasley, that all-pro offensive line. But their defense also has to play. Their mediocre defense. Sean Lee is an all-pro. Take nothing away from Sean Lee. But that defense is nowhere near as good as the Giants' defense. Now, if you put Sean Lee on the Giants' defense, they can stop anyone. Giants' biggest problem on defense is linebackers, which is going to come into play. Because if the Cowboys followed their game plan from last year, which they might, which they probably will, they're going to try to feed Zeke. Especially considering, who knows if he'll be there in a few weeks. He probably will. Tom Brady served his suspension, but it took a while. And considering Dak Prescott's a second-year quarterback now, they might bring him along like Seattle did Russell Wilson and slowly give him the reins. I think Dak has the talent to make all the throws. I think Dak has a high football IQ. But when you have an all-pro running back and an all-pro offensive line, you don't really have to stress too much, do you? You look at Brett Favre's best year in Minnesota, the Bounty Gate year, when they went to the championship game against the Saints, and Adrian Peterson took so much pressure off of Brett, an aging quarterback, and he got to be great. Imagine how easy it is for a young quarterback, especially one with more mobility. That being said, I'm going to take the Giants, because I think the Giants' defense has a better chance of stopping Dallas than vice versa. The Giants' offense souped up with Brandon Marshall, Evan Ingram, a speedy tight end, even though they cut Will Tye, which I think was ill-advised, considering they're still carrying, according to the roster, they're still carrying four tight ends, even though Rhett Ellison is a hybrid fullback. I think that move might come back to bite them eventually, but I think as of right now, the move was made as a sign of confidence in Evan Ingram, and nobody's seen him play more than the coaches. I think Ingram's going to have a good game, couple catches, he might get up near 100 yards, maybe a touchdown. Odell Beckham Jr. is going to play. I don't know where all the rumors of, oh, is he going to play week one came from. Yes, he's going to play week one. Come on now. It's against the Dallas Cowboys. Now, if this game was against the Jets, they don't need him to play, clearly. But this game's against the Dallas Cowboys. You only play them twice a year. Divisional matchup. You're trying to win the division. You're trying to contend for a Super Bowl championship. You need your best player on offense on the field. I think this one comes down to the late game, as usual. And I think the Giants pull this one out just barely. Who knows? Maybe it'll come down to a blocked field goal like the game from a few years ago. I doubt it. I hope not. My heart rate can't take that. But I got the Giants. Moving on to the Monday Night Football games. The first kick is at 7:10 p.m. Saints-Vikings. I'll take the Vikings, I guess. I think this is a game that to some people has meaning. Because some might want to see Drew Brees sneak into the playoffs and try and come up with another Super Bowl victory to put the cherry on the cake for his Hall of Fame resume. But personally, I don't see that happening. for New Orleans, not this year at least. I don't think they're good enough. Michael Thomas is a phenomenal receiver, but after having given up Brandon Cooks, I don't think their offense has enough firepower. Sure, they did sign Adrian Peterson, but we don't know what he has left in the tank. Personally, I don't think running back was a big concern for them. I'm a Mark Ingram fan. I think Mark Ingram is a good running back. Is he a Hall of Famer like Adrian Peterson? No. Does he have the upside and potential to perform as well as Adrian Peterson? No. Can he get you 75 yards a game? Yeah. Can he explode for 150 one game? Yeah, he can do that. So the fact that they're going to be shifting two running backs in and out, I'm assuming, means that they might be trying to take some pressure off Drew, who's usually in the top 5, top 10 in pass attempts and passing yards every single year, which especially becomes a concern as he gets older. Either way, I'm going to go with the Vikings. Dalvin Cook, Sam Bradford, Adam Thielen. A decent offense, but a great, stout defense. I think they can hold this one. Now, this game counts on Sam Bradford. I think Sam Bradford should be able to throw for close to, if not over, 300 yards this game. Fairly easily, so to speak. He's got a good receiving core. He has Kyle Rudolph. While we're rounding out the top five tight ends in this episode, he's got Kyle Rudolph out there. You can't really defend him. He's too big, he's too quick, he's too strong. When you mix that in with a running game, I think they should be able to win this. The Vikings will be a good team this year. I don't think they'll be a great team, and I think they'll miss the playoffs, but I think they'll be a great team on Monday night and take the first game. And the late game, the nightcap of the Monday night football game, if you will, 10:20 p.m., 7:20 p.m. West Coast time, Chargers-Broncos, which should be intriguing. Traditionally, these are close, tight-knit, whoever has the ball last kind of games. I'll go with Denver and Trevor Siemian. I think Trevor's going to show the world that he's a pretty good quarterback this year. Once again, I don't think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I don't know. He might be a Pro Bowl replacement. I don't think he's Pro Bowl caliber, per se. Who knows? Maybe he'll show me this year. But I think he's talented enough to take this team to the postseason. Considering they did it with a 400-year-old Peyton Manning just trying to not make mistakes, I think a young, more athletic quarterback who's admittedly learning on the job a bit, but has some experience, should be able to win this game. I'm not buying the Chargers this year. Sorry, Chargers fans. The Chargers are one of the weirder teams in the league. Sometimes they're really hot, and then they're really cold. They take naps throughout the season, as Chris Berman used to say. As a side note, is it going to be odd for anyone out there to just not start their Sunday with Chris Berman on Sunday Countdown? I'm going to miss him. The man's a legend. He's a big part of my love of football. And he shows that football, while it is a modern gladiatorial sport, as some people like to say, you know, bash your head into each other, and somebody scores. There's the entertainment factor. That's why the NFL is growing, because of people like him bringing in the masses by being entertaining and showing the lighter side of things. Either way, I'll take Denver. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up each and every Week 1 game. Remember, we still have 15 games this Sunday and Monday, with the Kansas City-New England game kicking off the season a few days ago. And it's going to be the first weekend all the way through February. We have football every Sunday. They might be saying, Nick, you said that before at the beginning. I'm excited, damn it. It's football time. It's a good time. Don't worry. Kick back and be happy. Anyways, reminder, we're going to be on Saturday afternoons now. I know, this is 2 weeks in a row we were on Saturdays, so you might say to yourself, you're always on Saturdays. That wasn't the plan to begin with, just behind the scenes. But it was so well received on Saturday. We made the call. Now we're staying on Saturdays. Get some more in-depth previews of the games, and hopefully y'all enjoy. On to the next one, folks. Have a great week. Thank you for joining us on the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.